Sky Carumba, October 30th to November 5th, 2022. A thickening crescent moon greets us in the evening sky on Sunday evening this week. The moon's at first quarter as it passes near Saturn on Tuesday. The ringed planet is near the meridian as darkness begins. The gibbous moon is near Jupiter on Friday, and the big planet is getting higher in the west as darkness begins. Mars rises mid-evening. It's still somewhat close to the Hyades V. In case you get them mixed up, Aldebaran is the star in the V. 2 months ago, Mars was close to the V. It's been moving eastward or directly and is now close to the star Tianguan. Watch night to night this week and you should see that it's turning around. Retrograde motion will take the red planet not exactly back toward the V over the next 2 months. It'll head in the direction of the kite-shaped Pleiades, but not get all the way there before it turns around and resumes direct motion. Orion is rising earlier in the evening, a signal to Northern Hemisphere sky watchers that winter's coming. Venus and Mercury aren't visible this week. Venus is still emerging from Superior Conjunction, and Mercury's heading toward it. There will be a total lunar eclipse next week. The moon is full on the 8th. It'll pass through Earth's shadow for a total lunar eclipse lasting an hour and 25 minutes. The penumbral phase begins at 0802 Universal Time that day. Partial phase starts at 0909. Totality is from 10:16 to 11:41. Partial phase ends at 12:49, and the penumbral phase ends at 13:56. If you need help converting these times to your local time, a really good resource is timeanddate.com. For most of the Americas, this eclipse happens during moonset, as morning light heralds a rising sun. The entire event is visible from western North America, most of the Pacific, and Northeast Asia. A sliver of eastern Australian coast will see all of it too, but it's a moonrise or evening event for most of the continent. Most of Asia and the northern and eastern parts of Europe also see the eclipse during moonrise. It's out of view for Western Europe and all of Africa. Uranus is a little east of the moon during the eclipse. The planet's at opposition on the 9th, approximately 18.7 astronomical units, or 2,795 million kilometers from us. The moon's proximity doesn't help us see it at opposition. It's possible, but tricky. You'll need magnification, but look for Uranus during the eclipse. The moon's never completely dark during a total eclipse, but it'll be dark enough to make a big difference. Get a sky chart showing where you can find that bluish-green dot that is Uranus. The moon will be close to the Pleiades during this eclipse and on the 9th. Observe the colors you see and where you see them during this eclipse. If you've never seen a total lunar eclipse, you might be surprised. The shadows we usually think of are black or dark gray, and maybe you've heard that the moon will actually totally disappear. Well, the shadow you see crossing the moon on the 8th is more likely to be brown with some orange or red, and you'll still see the moon through it. It may be dark brown on one side of the moon and a bit orange or red on the other. Reddish light scattering through Earth's atmosphere makes it to the moon to light it up in those colors during an eclipse. It's possible the shadow will be dark gray if there are a lot of clouds all around the sunset and sunrise zone on Earth. And for reasons no one's sure of, some people have claimed to see greenish or bluish hues during an eclipse. You don't need any special eye protection to look at a lunar eclipse. It's a solar eclipse when you have to worry about that. You can enjoy an eclipse of the moon with your bare eyes. See this eclipse next week if you can. The next total lunar eclipse won't happen until March 2025. The mysterious appearance of a new star 450 years ago ushered a change in scientific thinking. One night in November 1572, people all over the Northern Hemisphere saw a star where they had seen none before. The constellation Cassiopeia looks like an M or a W, depending on where it is as it circles the North Celestial Pole. In storytelling, its familiar outline marks a throne onto which a vain queen from an ancient kingdom is chained. No one expected to see a sparkling new jewel there. For about 2,000 years, various educated people had thought the heavens were mostly unchanging. In their view, all the stars that would ever exist were already up there and weren't going anywhere. Planets, the sun, and the moon obviously moved, and people accepted that. Comets were a little hard to explain. Nevertheless, in the late 16th century, it was a very common view that stars were permanent, fixed in place, and not changing. This new star of 1572 blatantly challenged that idea. Astronomers first thought that since stars don't appear or disappear, the newcomer must be some other kind of fairly close object, like the moon or planets. Tycho Brahe began observing the star on November 11th. He wasn't the only notable astronomer to make drawings and descriptions of the star, as it very slowly faded from view, but his observations have become so famous it's often called Tycho's star. He described it in 1573 in a work titled De Stella Nova. In Latin, that means on the new star. By itself, the word nova came to mean new star. Brahe knew this new object couldn't be close. It had to be far away, like the other stars. An object that's close shows a parallax, the appearance of a shift in position compared to what's behind it as the observer moves from place to place. Like when you cross the street and a street sign goes from being on your left to your right, but a distant building still looks like it's in about the same place. The new star didn't move at all the way planets and the moon move in front of the stars. Brahe figured out that people were wrong about the stars being unchanging. Brahe also practiced astrology. He believed the new star foretold a period of peace, followed by one of war. French theologian Theodore Beza believed it was a new star of Bethlehem and Christ would soon return. Various others made various other predictions. And since all those predictions couldn't be right, people became a little more likely to question whether astrology had any merit at all. In the centuries since the nova of 1572 adorned our skies, science has learned that stars form and die over the course of millions of years. A nova isn't a new star at all, but a rather old one in its death throes. With modern telescopes, someone discovers a nova every few months. The brightest ones, including the one in 1572, are now called supernovae. The changing nature of the distant heavens is fairly common knowledge now. There's nothing left of Tycho's star that we can see with the naked eye. High-tech equipment can see it in other wavelengths, though, and scientists today are always learning new things about supernovae because we know where that one was, and we can examine what's left of it. We can recreate star maps to show what the sky looked like with Tycho's star in it in 1572. And how about this? Scientists can even study the supernova's light 4.5 centuries later. There were no cameras or spectrographs 450 years ago, but light that went away from us shines on interstellar dust in that neighborhood about 13,000 light years away, and that reflects back toward us. And that's how we can know today what kind of supernova it was. Sky Caramba,